I will say, though, of all the games and movies that we're going to talk about, Snatcher is like almost a one for one Blade Runner ripoff.
Oh,
like
100%.
to the point where I'm like, if that was made today, you would go to jail, Kojima.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
That is actually Hideo Kojima's sort of thing, especially before Metal Gear Solid, because like
legally distinct.
Yeah,
that's what Police Knots was. It's legally distinct. You know, lethal weapon.
It's just lethal weapon.
Yeah.
We got Lethal Weapon at home.
Look, if that's Lethal Weapon at home, then we have the superior version, I'm just saying.
Just a reminder, this is a spoiler-heavy podcast. Different series that require a spoiler warning will be in the description.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Gaming Theater Podcast. On today's episode, we're going to have a cool little topic about Metal Gear Solid and how espionage films inspired the game genre, or at least this game for it. Now, to help me discuss more about this subject, we've got some special guests with us today. And just to let everybody know where we're starting off with, my name is Leo. I'm also known as the Geek Scorpio, and I'll be your host this evening. And over to my right is going to be...
Yo, I'm Brandon, also known as Tomato Man. I do a lot of video stuff and make funny noises and voices.
He's right. That is a thing he does. I've seen it. And over to their right is going to be...
Hi, my name is Liz, also known as Zombie Hand. I do a lot of work for Gaming Theater Presents, and just happy to be here today.
Yay!
I don't come on a lot of these anymore.
Less, but not. But your presence is always, you know, wanted. Now over to their right is going to be...
It's me. I'm Lily. I'm one of the hosts of the Metal Gear Mondays podcast, and I would consider myself a subject matter expert.
At a previous job that I was at, they used to call them SMEs because SMEs.
Smeez.
The SMEs. Yeah. I was like that.
All right. And over to their right is going to be...
Hey, this is Alessio Summerfield, also from... Metal Gear Mondays, and I will. What? I'm a SME, but just because I'm Captain Hook's assistant.
SME, SME,
SME.
Wait, but SME is me.
thanks for having us.
No problem.
Are you sure the only SME is SME?
the only SMOO is SMOO.
Are these even words at this point? I'm so confused.
Smelling you later. Anyway, all right, with that being said, now let's take a quick trip over to the Magical Merch Booth.
Whoa!
Ah! So here we are on the Magical Merch Booth. And to introduce their podcast to our listening audience, over here we have Metal Gear Mondays. Tell us a little bit about yourself, guys.
Oh, God. Yeah, like you said, we are Metal Gear Mondays. We have been doing a podcast about Metal Gear, Hideo Kojima, his games, his influences, the things that that he has influenced, and all things in between for 10 years now. It's a lot.
Oh, wow.
We've been doing it for a while. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I do it with, we've got Alessio here, who we started together 10 years ago with our friend Isaac, who, rest in peace, he's alive, but also I hope he's resting comfortably.
I meant that more
literally. Yeah. Yeah, we've just been kind of doing. We've had many iterations over the years, we're in the middle of our coverage. We're revisiting Metal Gear Solid 2 and spending way too long talking about a game that takes maybe 15 hours to beat.
We have talked more about you've got the MASH situation where the whole storyline, it takes longer to explain than the actual event that it's on there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's technically the same event, just retold, like, what, six times, right? Like, Metal Gear, Metal Gear 2, and so on and so forth. They're all just the same thing.
It's very Zelda. Very Zelda.
Actually, yeah.
One thing I want to add to what Lily said is if you guys like today's episode subject matter, we have a whole season where we went through episode by episode on specific films. So we covered Terminator, Terminator 2, Escape from New York, Escape from LA, From Russia with Love, and then a bit later after our Death Stranding coverage, Lily covered Blade Runner, the original, and 2049. So we may revisit that and cover some more movies, but if you want like a deep dive into each of those, we do them like book club, game club style, where we go through kind of the entire event of the film. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of guests and stuff like that.
Just casually name drop some of my favorite films.
Yeah. Okay.
No, yeah, and fun. If you like we've had guests on, we've done interviews with voice actors and people who work behind the scenes. So we've talked to David Hayter, Paul Eiding, Debbie Mae West, a lot of the voices behind the series. We've also talked to Alessio has talked to Jeremy Blaustein, who was the original translator localizer for the original Metal Gear Solid and for Snatcher, one of Hideo Kojima's other games. We may have Jeremy on later this year when we talk about Snatcher. And Chris Zimmerman Salter, who was the voice director for the series for a very long time. So yeah, lots to love about Metal Gear Mondays.
Jeremy Blaustein worked on Silent Hill, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yep.
He voice directed Silent Hill 2.
I was gonna say.
That guy, okay. I was playing a PS1 version of Dragon Warrior 7 the other day, and it dawned on me that he also translated that game.
That man is a legend.
Yeah, it was like, and Suikoden and Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Holy like, my man's... Shit. My
He's
man's,
been busy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's the homie Jeremy shouts out, you know?
Yeah. He has a company where he will translate your game as well. So check out Dragon Baby.
Nice. Note to self, design game, then ask if they can translate it.
Yeah. Then reach out to
yeah.
you.
Yeah, step one, step two.
That's awesome.
I do want to also issue a correction to something Alessio said. Definitely covered Blade Runner. I don't think I covered Blade Runner 2049 because the one time I've seen Blade Runner 2049 was in the theater with my old roommate, and we were completely zooted, and I remember nothing about that movie. So.
Word. Okay.
I can say it was a good movie.
Yeah, I really liked it.
No! I believe it. I really liked Dave Bautista in that movie. But that's really about all that I can kind of remember.
Kind of stole the beginning of that movie.
You know what? Yeah. It was a Patreon only thing that got done after our time.
Because
Lily and I took a hiatus for a little bit.
Yeah.
So
we also have a Patreon. Patreon.com/Metal Gear Monday. So that's also.
Quick, sorry. Plug everything as quickly as possible.
Do it!
Plug.
All right. Before this becomes a plug fest on this. All right, with this, let's go ahead and get back to the show.
Whoa!
So here we are on today's episode, and we're going to be talking about Metal Gear Solid and how espionage films inspire this genre, or inspire a genre, or in general. So when we're talking about this is that... And we discussed this before in other episodes for it, and it keeps coming up. Genres will inspire other genres. Topics will inspire other story or writing and story or things. Like, we talk about storytelling and storytelling aspects, and you'll see just how some things start one way in a story and end up in another. Like, you do If you do the link-ups right, Shakespeare can be linked up to certain horror comedies if you do it right. A lot of like newer film techniques and such that we have for storytelling starts in the 80s, even though the 80s is a schlocky area where we'll throw anything at the wall.
And it all stuck because it was usually bloody.
Yeah.
Movies from the 70s and their style of that pulpy storytelling comes up to becoming like almost like the comic book stories that we are reading nowadays. Things will inspire to each other. So if we're talking about right now, which is Metal Gear Solid, and before we get to Metal Gear Solid, we have to talk about the man, the myth, the legend that is Hideo Kojima. And Hideo Kojima, if you don't know, loves movies.
Huge movie guy, Hideo Kojima.
He is the big movie guy. He will let you know he's a big movie guy.
That's like half his Twitter or more is just him reviewing movies he's watched.
What's the quote? 70% of my body is made of films. Or
was it only 70? Yeah. I thought it was more.
It might be more.
I can't remember it. So, I mean, you might be right.
It's 70% of it is made of films with a 10% margin of error.
My favorite thing about when he posts reviews of his movies is that, like, he never outright says anything overtly negative about the movies that he watches, but you can tell when he likes a movie versus when he doesn't, because when he likes it, he writes like a few paragraphs or at least a paragraph, and when he doesn't like it, it's like a sentence and a half. It's like, oh, he did not like this movie.
But he's not negative about it, like you said, so it's, he's not saying it's bad, but you can parse as much since he didn't say anything else.
There's, I forget what it is, but I know a lot of good film critiques and video game critiques will, especially historians, will tell you there, you don't really have too much of a bad thing if you know what you're, if they do something really, really good with it. Like, or if you can learn something from it or such, or you can get something more out of it. Like, I've never, what I was about to say, most people came into the movie Demolition Man thinking that it's going to be a schlocky film with, you know, Wesley Snipes and a big other muscly guy with Sylvester Stallone. But it is like one of the best utopian dystopian combination films, and there's a lot more going on for it. Sure. But at the surface, it is Sylvester Stallone punching out Wesley Snipes, and I'm still here for that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very much like a two things can be true type of situation.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. One of my favorite little Easter eggs, I guess you should call it, is that depending on the region, the only existing restaurant is different.
Oh, I
think
wow.
I think in like Brazil, it's actually Pizza Hut.
That yeah.
Instead of Taco
Bell. That is an expensive thing to decide to do from a production standpoint. So that's crazy.
What's really crazy is that it's technically true because Taco Bells are fucking everywhere.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which means that if it was premiered in Japan, or it would be mostly KFC. If they're going to go,
that is accurate.
But yes, yeah, so like there is a lot to take from films and such if you know what you're looking for. Like, I will praise up and down that Sam Raimi is one of my favorite directors of all time. Now, if you're asking me, does he make really good movies?
Debatable. That
depends on how you're going at this.
Spider-Man 3 would like to have a word.
He made the legendary horror film of Evil Dead series.
Yeah.
He also made, you know, Darkman, which is amazing. He's also made not very great movies either. But then he's got Spider-Man in his repertoire, so pick and choose.
I mean, with that, it's really a case of, you know, producer interjection, where it's like they're going to say, it's our money, do it this way. And the director will say, but I don't understand that way. I don't want to do that. And then Venom appears.
Yeah.
Somehow Venom returned.
With his own three set of movies.
But yeah, so like, Hideo Kojima, big movie guy. And he does that in his works. Like, there is reference upon reference upon reference. It is, I did look it up the other day. It was like one of his earlier games. I don't know if it was before Metal Gear or the Metal Gear Solid series, but it's called Police Knots.
Yeah, it was after Snatcher, but before Metal Gear
Solid. Before Solid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I know it's after, it's, I think after Metal Gear, because Metal Gear is a different thing than Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, like, correct.
Oh,
yeah.
And I'm not saying, like, as just, oh no, it's a name only. No, these are two completely different types of games,
sure,
it feels like it.
It's crazy that Snatcher was 1 year after Metal Gear, because graphically they are worlds apart.
And on, I think, the same system too, because didn't it first come out on MSX?
Mm-hmm. But even on MSX it looks gorgeous.
It's mind-blowing.
I think the music sounds a lot cooler on the MSX.
I mean, once in a while you get an outlier for graphics on it. What is it, it's 1982 is when Dragon's Lair comes out, and Dragon's Lair looks like a full-on motion picture.
Sure.
The next game it barely has a couple of pixels going to on that.
I mean, it technically was. It was on a laser disc. So.
Yeah.
But
choose your own laser disc adventure.
Yeah.
Like, to circle back on Snatcher, I mean, the fact that we got it at all is a miracle and a half. So I just like that I can take that and throw it in my CD player and listen to One Night in Neo Kobe City.
True. What a great song. The first time I heard that song, I was like, there's no way in hell they fit this on a CD, like with a whole game next to it, because it sounds so good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'll throw on Metal Gear Solid 4 just to listen to that on the pod, the iPod in the game.
Oh, I forgot so, it's on the iPod. Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah, very good. There was oh my God, what? I'm trying to remember the name of the company. There was a company that did a pressing of Snatcher on vinyl, and that is a wonderful,
was it Mondo?
Wonderful soundtrack. Ooh.
It was Mondo.
I think hold on, let me triple check.
It was my introduction to the rabbit hole of video game vinyls.
100%. So
that was the first one I got. Other companies might have done other pressings, because they did differing like color splash types. Right, they did the same thing with like Metal Gear Solid later too. And but the moment that went out, I was like, I need to get this. A, because Konami is acknowledging this exists, and that makes me happy. And
Ship to Shore, I think.
Ship
were the
to Shore
ones
was
did.
The distributor, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mondo might have done one of the other variants then, because I know that a lot of them, they bounce around.
Yeah.
But
super fun.
The centerfold, when you open up that thing, man, the artwork from Snatcher in there is just so good.
Yeah. I will say, though, of all the games and movies that we're going to talk about, Snatcher is like almost a one-for-one Blade Runner ripoff.
Oh,
like to the point where I'm like, if that was made today, you would go to jail, Kojima.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
That is actually Hideo Kojima's sort of thing, especially before Metal Gear Solid, because like...
Legally Distinct?
Yeah.
That's what Police Knots was. It's Legally Distinct, you know, Lethal Weapon.
It's just Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
We got Lethal Weapon at home.
Look, if that's Lethal Weapon at home, then we have the superior version, I'm just saying.
True.
Yeah, I'm going to throw shade at Mel Gibson. I'll do it all day.
Fair enough.
100%. It's the least he deserves, quite frankly.
So here's the thing with this, and this has to deal with production things, because sometimes a lot of times Hollywood doesn't see the writing on the wall, even though it's already been there. You know, at this point, what? The Police Knots, what year does that come out?
Like 94?
Police Knots was like
91. Okay, you're 91.
Right, because it came out on other platforms. I was thinking like the PlayStation 4 or PlayStation.
Original.
Yeah, I think 94, right?
It's early 90s, late 80s. I know that.
Yeah, PC 98 was 94. Yeah.
So the important thing about that is, I mean, they know how much money Star Wars came out with, right? They were paying attention to that. So back then in the 80s and the early 90s, what happens is that a production company for a film will just give the rights away to whatever game company to make a design. And they don't really pay too much attention, because if it does a lot of money, we get to be paid. If it doesn't, well, we're still paid for the license, so we don't really care. It's not like now where there's whole like connections to make sure that everything is on top of each other, like Mad Max, when they were doing, I can't remember his name. Not Beyond the Road, the other one, the one after that, like Fury Road.
Oh,
when Mad Max Fury Road came out, people forget there was also the Mad Max game, and they were two distinct storylines for both games, but for the game and the movie, but they had to have aesthetically the same stuff, and so someone was keeping an eye out to.
For brand recognition, that kind of thing.
Correct. Back then, nah. You make the game. Here's my license. I'll see you in about 6 months. Later, guys.
Yeah, licensing back then, though, was also very different in Japan. I mean, you could get away with a lot of different stuff that you would never have gotten away with over here. Mm-hmm. So references, they went a lot further there.
I almost wonder if from like a legal perspective, it's just that U.S. attorneys just weren't paying any attention.
Back then, it was
Japan,
more of that.
And vice versa, because, like, I know just from a whole bunch of research on a project I've been doing, like, I know that Japanese companies didn't even really consider the United States as being, like, a huge moneymaker in the mid-90s when it came to, like, bringing anime and stuff over. And, like, corporate overreach didn't start happening until, like, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, I don't know, it just seems like a lot gets lost in translation between that span of that stretch of ocean, you know what I mean? So I do wonder if a lot of it is just that.
It is. Sometimes they just sort of miss the mark. Like, it happens, Hollywood, like, back in the late 80s, 89, Batman comes out, does this huge gangbusters of cash, and it's because they're a comic-based movie, that was done really, really well. And when producers got into the 90s, they're like, we should do more of that. But the message that they got was, we should do more 1930s-based comics. That's what we were needing to do. And, like, they just sort of missed the mark. To be fair, anime goes through that same stretch because, what is it? There was an old joke that getting drugs was easier than getting anime back in the 90s.
Like, I don't know if that was a joke. I think that was they were being serious.
I wouldn't call that a joke at all.
You gotta get like bootleg VHS tapes from friends.
And you only got the 3 of like 27 episodes and you hope for the best.
Take what you can get, man.
Mm-hmm. But no, there's not really a way of corporate overreach, and most of that is oversight. And I know that in the game series is why early on there's so few Japanese RPGs that come here. Like, they don't put the effort to do the translation or such because they don't think they'll make the profit margin back for that.
Well, that was so much more expensive back then, too.
True. For sure. Because you had to press it and you had to make it, and then you had to region set it.
Yeah, I like that regions are mostly gone.
And console exclusivity.
Yeah.
Why limit your market?
Everything's an Xbox. This is an Xbox right now.
Sure. Like that. Yeah, we're in an Xbox.
If you're brave enough, we're in an Xbox.
I'd rather be a PlayStation. Yeah.
I will say this. Like, I remember very early on, I think it might have been one of my parents was like, I just don't understand why video games can't be like film and TV, where like you buy a VHS and you can play it in any VCR, buy a DVD and you can play it in any DVD player. And I've never stopped thinking about that. Like, it comes up from time to time and I'm like, I mean, the answer is money, right? It's like all these companies want to make money. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, how different of a world would we be in right now if it had been like that?
That meme of like the spotless city with like the chrome and like the 100% utopia set society. If we could just play a game in anything we wanted, 100%. I want to play Skyrim in a toaster. Okay,
don't tell Todd; he'll do it.
Yeah,
I want to. The fact that Todd isn't doing it is that's not ally behavior.
Yeah.
That's what we call homophobic. Hate crime.
Listen, I'm a lot of things, so there's a lot of phobics you can be when it comes to me, and I think Todd is all of them for not putting Skyrim on my tea kettle.
My $30 toaster with no screens or electronics. Why can't I play Skyrim on it?
Listen, I can play Doom on a pregnancy test. Why not Skyrim?
That's a shoot. That's real.
What is it? There was a Simpsons episode that this reminds me of when they go to Itchy and Scratchy Land and one of the robots shows off all of his computer chips and such in his head. He goes, see, Homer? That's why yours didn't work.
Oh, my God. I love that you brought that up. I just watched that episode like 6 months ago and I died laughing. Because the implication, right? The implication is that Homer has,
he built a robot but forgot to put anything else besides I built the shell and left.
Sure. But, like, we never learn anything else about this fucking robot project. It's crazy. It's like one of the best jokes in Simpsons, I feel like.
That's okay. For me, one of my favorite weird running gags on that one is the fact that they still carry from season one the giant Omek totem that they have inside their basement.
And the thing is, they
bring it up once in a while for a yard sale, which means Homer has gone down there, carried the whole thing, lifted it out, and then put it back again at some point.
Because nobody wants to buy it.
Dedication.
Yeah. Circling back, though, with this police knots, right? But no, it's basically, you know, Lethal Weapon all the way through. Yeah.
Which, like, hate Mel Gibson or not, it's like legitimately a very good movie. Like, I love Lethal Weapon, Die Hard. It's like very much so in that genre.
Mel Gibson's just a massive prick.
Yeah, he sucks. He sucks.
I'm a huge Mad Max fan. I love the old Mad Maxes. Sure. He's a prick.
just think of it as like the camera captured his soul back then. It's a different Mel Gibson. It's like alternate reality.
That's how I sleep at night.
Sure. Yeah. I don't think he makes royalties off of those anymore, but even if he does, just go steal the movie and then watch it that way.
I will not show you my Mad Max movie collection.
And subsequently, I must say, Gaming Theater does not support piracy in any form. As long as physically owning a product means you actually own the product. But if it doesn't, then piracy all the way.
I'm all for
piracy,
some
piracy.
I'm all for some moral piracy. If you want to listen to some music from somebody who done did the bad thing, just go steal their music.
You say done did the bad thing.
Hey, vinyl doesn't pay royalties if you already had it before they got canceled.
That's true. Me as I cradle my brand new CDs.
We're all broken.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're no, right. So there is a question I have, and with the Metal Gear fanatics here,
all four of us,
did Kojima actually work on the OG Metal Gear, like Metal Gear, Metal Gear 2?
Oh yes. Yeah,
he didn't want to continue.
Yeah, those are his games.
Yeah, he didn't want to continue after the first Metal Gear. He was like, yeah, I don't even want to do a second one. But then Konami was like, you're gonna though.
So
Snake,
what?
Snake's Revenge. What happened?
Yeah, Snake's Revenge happened, which was he made Metal Gear 1, which was like his baby. And as much as we talk about Kojima being like he loves iterating and he loves like showing his influences, like Metal Gear was the birth of a genre of games. Like we don't have stealth games without Metal Gear, and then again we don't have modern stealth without Metal Gear Solid. So
if you
want to
be
like
an asshole, you can say the original Castle Wolfenstein predates Metal Gear, and it's essentially the same type of game. But
well, Alessio, that's what you like to do. But me, we're talking about Metal Gear. No,
the rest of us are not assholes.
So
asshole's
he made
my middle name, Brandon.
That's amazing.
Oh, Alessio Asshole Summerfield, that's what they call him.
But are you sure that your middle name doesn't start with an S, so your initials are in fact ass?
Oh, I wish.
That'd be great.
You beat my high score, you jerk. Anyway.
It was
Metal Gear 1 was like his baby. So
the reason why I bring this up is because
he didn't want to make more after the first one. And then Konami got a completely different team to make Metal Gear. It wasn't even called Metal Gear. It was just called Snake's Revenge, which was the sequel to the first one. And it was famously shit. Mm-hmm. And so somebody in Konami told him about it while they were making it. And then it was like not good. And he was like, well, I guess I gotta do a second one. So he made Metal Gear 2. And then that started the progression of him making a Metal Gear game. And then very clearly not wanting to make another Metal Gear game, but making another one anyway.
I feel like Kojima has a history of like, I'm going to do this because I'm going to be an asshole. Because they're like, hey, we made a second one. He's like, no, fuck that. I can do a better job. And then they're like, hey, you should make another Metal Gear. And he's like, fuck you, but I'll make it good.
That's
and then,
kind of how that worked, though, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, then with MGS4 as well, people are like, we're going to send you death threats unless you keep making Metal Gear. And he's like, I'm going to do it. And it's going to blow your mind. Death Stranding, right? He's like, hey, Konami, fuck you. I just made a better game. You know what I mean?
My favorite Death Stranding 2s, because that one's just straight up, hey, Konami, you're not going to make Metal Gear Solid again? That's okay. Take Rex's head, put it on this like demon angel thing, and then make Snake into a skull. Let's go.
I don't think that means Konami's not going to make more Metal Gears.
Not after what we heard today.
It's true.
Or the 2 million units that Delta moved in like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Metal Gear Solid 4 is like the ultimate, like,
it's a guilty pleasure.
You want Metal Gear? I'll give you Metal Gear. And then it's just bah, 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 just to everybody who gave a fuck about it. And
I mean, I'll fight a lot of people. Yeah. I think the best scene in the franchise is Metal Gear Rex versus Rey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The fact that they let you actually participate in that and it runs as well as it does when so much of that game barely runs is just mind-boggling.
I would call that, I don't know if I would agree that it's like the best in the series, but it is very iconic. It is a section of the game that we do appreciate pretty thoroughly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I guess what I'll say is the Shadow Moses scene of MGS4 is probably one of my favorites across the board.
It's very
just
good.
Because it hits so many points of nostalgia and really does a good job of bringing you back to that area, seeing the ravages of time on it. Mm-hmm. It just, I don't know. I don't know if he can really top that in my personal book, it's but great. I'm also, mm-hmm. I grew up on all this stuff. So
Isn't it like 30 minutes after the Metal Gear on Metal Gear action that we get the Mount Rushmore of
Mount Snake Metal Gear? Yeah. We get it immediately after it, actually.
So good.
Canonically,
one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in a video game.
Canonically, Mount Snake Moore, actually.
Yep.
I love when I get Alessio to spit take while he's drinking water.
It's a guilty pleasure. so the reason why I bring that up, though, is that he's worked on every Metal Gear except for Snake's Revenge, which is not Metal Gear, even in the title. When you do something like that, it's... I don't think Metal Gear gets as much praise as Metal Gear Solid does, though. Because, now, granted, this is just a stepping stone for what we're talking about here, and the reason why is because we're talking about films and inspiration for the game, and Metal Gear has very little of that. Granted, that's probably more of a tech thing than anything else from the way Metal Gear Solid and Solid 2 work.
A lot of it is. I think, though, like, he was kind of blunt about his references.
Oh, yeah. He's never been shy about this reference.
Well, I mean, there's bosses just straight up called Arnolds.
Yeah.
Which are which are just drawn like the Terminator from the first movie. So,
if it was any more blunt, there would be a sign with an IMDb page link on it. That's how blunt he is on this.
I mean, I do think
to some extent, too, though, like you guys have it in your notes here for The Great Escape. I know, obviously, it ties into MGS3, but I think the original Metal Gear has a lot of that in it.
That was, I think, the inspiration that he kind of rolled with on the first game when they're like, yeah, we can't really figure out how to make this action game action-y because the MSX kind of sucks. Have you figured out, Kojima? He's like, Well, I just watched The Great Escape, and they were just trying not to get found. I wonder if we can make that work.
Right. Genre by way of limitation.
Yeah. It is crazy how long it took for scrolling to like happen. Like I'm reading Masters of Doom right now.
I read that, that's good.
Fantastic.
Love that book.
But it's like the first 100 pages are essentially like, here's why Nintendo owned the entire video game market because of their like infinite scrolling. And it's just nuts that like, I mean, especially the MSX, because the MSX is just a computer, right?
Yeah.
It's like MSX 1 and 2 plus the PC-98 and that whole NEC series of 99 and on and on and on. They're literally just personal computers that can play games.
With giant air quotes on play games.
Yeah, for sure.
It is always my favorite part of that book in Masters of Doom when, is it like, I think it's Romero gets sent, just given, like in the middle of the night, here, play this, and it has a 100%. Disc. And all it is Mario 1. But the like just the first stage of Mario is like, to anyone who's like a layman in that, would just, all right, I just played the first stage of Mario. I don't understand it. But they got it. With this, we can do scrolling, and now we know how to get a bunch of other stuff to work that we couldn't do it before. Game industry.
Super good book.
I can recommend so many
other books like that for you, but I can wait until the end of the podcast.
I need a list. I need it in my veins.
I have a good list.
Preferably book on tape.
I'm doing some competitive research for something. So, if you've got any of those, hit me up. I've also been taking a look at Play Nice, the Blizzard book that Jason Schreier did as well.
Oh, my gosh. I read one that's Jacked is the History of Grand Theft Auto.
I saw that. Yeah.
So good. I've never really played much GTA. I still was like, I have to own this book physically, so I do.
Is it the same guy who did, is it David Kushner as well?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he's written a lot of stuff. It's crazy. Like a lot of game-specific stuff.
Yeah. I have others, but again, I'll wait. But Jacked is a really good one. I always recommend that one.
Once you, like, that's the weird thing. Like, the tech that you need for that, it is amazing how long it took to come up with that. I bump into that same issue with Halo. The amount, Halo's biggest thing is the fact that you don't have a shield that would recharge. You're almost a decade and plus in of first person shooters before somebody's like, what if we didn't have to require health? What if we just had a shield that you can go through? It took forever to come up with something like that.
I mean, Halo did both, which I think is the superior way, but Let me get health and have a rechargeable buffer.
But yeah, the thing is that stealth in other games like that one is kind of rudimentary. But once you get to Metal Gear Solid, stealth is now...
Oh, yeah.
You can understand it. You can get to it. And then you can play around with it, tapping on the wall. Just to give it a little tap. Mm-hmm.
The Z-axis, I think, was Kojima's best friend. Because when it comes to Metal Gear Solid, it's not even so much just like that there were film influences, but filmmaking itself was an influence. And you can see that when... Because I recently replayed it just because I do that. I do that with a lot of my old favorite games. I think we all do, if we're being honest. There's an awful lot of long shots in that game. Like, the camera doesn't cut. The camera moves.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it move. And that makes it feel like an experience more than like if you're reading a book. It's like more like you're there because it's motion, not cutaways.
Yeah. And then they take different aspects for it. Like when you go to meet up with Gray Fox, who's taking out a bunch of little bunch of people in the another room.
Sorry. They look like monsters to you?
Silent Hill.
Look, this was PlayStation 1. The world was crunchy.
Yeah. But when they're before you meet up with Otacon, because Gray Fox is murking everybody in that room, you don't
the infamous hallway.
You don't even see it. You just are following up the trail of blood and getting in there. And it's, if you want other scenes that are like that, in the first Spartacus movie, way back in the 60s, you hear all the violence of everything that's going on in the Colosseum, but you don't, you're just watching two guys wait their turn and just sweat it out for it.
And I'm sure it's production reasons. They're like, well, we don't want to show 60 people getting their asses kicked because we can't afford to do that.
Well, again, I think it's like innovation by way of limitation. It doesn't
exactly. Like, but the thing with that one, like, it made Gray Fox dealing with him like that much more intense because, like, all right, you had 20 guys in this room, they're gone. I'm one dude, and I barely made it back there because I'm bad at this game. I want you to know, stealth is an option, right? The alarm is going off every 10 seconds. I'm not great at this.
Yeah. So I will say, speaking of alarms and speaking of that scene in particular, Metal Gear Solid, to me, I think the atmosphere is the thing that separated that game from every other game I'd ever played to that point. And I think 80% of the atmosphere is the sound. It's like the sound design, the voices, the music. Like, to me, that is the one thing that made 1998's Metal Gear Solid like a watershed moment.
Especially the way... And this is a musically soundtrack thing that you do. The soundtrack has to be set up in a way so that way it can just go into an energetic mode and then come back down when it needs to.
Right.
And musically speaking, we've had a couple of musicians in our. That's actually a lot trickier to do because you have to set up your bass so that way your regular tones so that way you would be able to make it kick up these high notes and then go right back down without missing a beat.
Dynamic audio back then was just not a thing. So the fact that they did that and made so many iconic, like, everybody knows the alert noise.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah, that's got to be one of the most iconic pieces of sound design in the history of video games. Like,
find a streamer that doesn't use it, and I'll give you $5.
It's the only video game that I can think of off the top of my head where you can show somebody a single piece of punctuation and they will hear a sound in their head.
Dude,
that's insane.
For the folks on video, I mean.
Yeah.
Look, but yeah, I have a work in progress crazy with that, too.
Yeah, you can show somebody an exclamation point or even just an image of a box, and they can hear in their head. Like, that's astounding. Like, that is a true feat.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to, like, throw this out there. So just to, like, to date the show, I was watching
why don't you propose to him instead?
I
don't know if they want to commit.
Look, it's fuck, marry, kill, all right? Pick one.
Yeah.
Kill
I've
the show.
I've got a little bit of a...
Don't do that. The show lives on.
Don't kill the show. I was watching the PlayStation State of Play today, and there was like a ninja game made by like the people who made the old Tenchu games, and there was a moment in the trailer where the main character, and it's like this isometric, like top down, like ninja thing, and they were walking around in a little box, and like everybody in the chat and our Discord was like, box, box, box. And it was just like,
it's, well, we have a certain type of person in that Discord, so I don't know if that's everyone.
I should probably join it.
It's one person, but they do it enough times it counts, right? That's how the system works.
We have a bit in our Discord where somebody will post just like a word or a phrase, and it's the most innocent, like innocuous thing, and then like six people will post the exact same thing in a row. And it's kind of like, yeah, that kind of happened. So it was just like that, just when the Saros trailer came on, everybody was just like Rahul, 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 just like Rahul Kohli, just saying Rahul. It's just like it's we're not okay. Please send help.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm blinking Morse code, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Move your eyes to your left if you're in trouble.
Oh.
Later, I realized the cameras are inverted, so I've been thinking everything's fine. Oh, no.
Yeah,
everything's
she's fine. Great. Everything's great.
Now, I don't... It
doesn't look like anything to me.
Everything's okay. I want to say, like, I don't know if this is rumor or not, that Metal Gear Solid, like, the movie that was most inspiring to that is Escape from New York.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you're stuck in an area, you can't really leave, and you have to deal with whatever could come out with there.
Yeah, you're trying to rescue, rescue some folks. Your name is quite literally the name of the main character, kind of.
Yeah, Snake. Okay,
they approached Kurt Russell first, by the way. Like, that was one of the people they approached for voicing Snake early on. So.
Which I get it. Snake Plissken, Snake.
Yeah,
they're both named David. It all works out.
Well,
actually, I'm kidding. I don't mind. we have the Metal Gear 1 book, and before he was named David, it was Justin Halley.
Oh my God! It's the Lieutenant. Power. The World's a Power book. Yes. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I have it.
Fucking
I own a,
love that book.
I
own
a hate copy. That book.
I love it.
I love hate it. How's
so
that?
It's so fun.
Did you know that canonically worst. Snake's Revenge is a fucking sequel to that book? Like the names of the characters? It's insane.
That's
like,
delightful.
And the villain, Colonel Vermin Kataffi. Yeah. We're intimately familiar with that book. There was a point
in the United States, there is a signed copy flying around that's been passed around because of our podcast.
It's like a library book where it's basically like we had a copy of the book and then all of the hosts signed it and then mailed it to a listener. And like it was a listener's responsibility to steward it and ship it off to the next person after they signed it. And
oh,
so we're trying to figure out who has it so that we can
you want it back.
Figure out the point. No, no, I don't want it back. Just like continue the tradition. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys we have it now.
Yeah. Speaking of, we also have an episode where we talk about the book, and I remember that moment as clear as day. We were in Renton, Washington. That's where I lived in Seattle at the time, and there was an expo there called Renton City Retro, and Cam Clark was there, and David Hayter was there, and Alessio and Isaac had come into town to go to that, and so we recorded two episodes in my bedroom. So I was just like on my, like kicking my feet up on my bed, just like tee, and like in my mic, and like Isaac and Alessio were over here. We recorded an episode about that book, and then we recorded an interview with Stephanie Houston, the voice of Quiet from Five. So we did both of those things, just like huddled around a microphone in my
on bedroom
in Kirkland, so Washington, fun. Just hanging out.
Yeah, what's the irony in voicing a character named Quiet, though?
Oh, yeah.
she doesn't speak much.
There's two lines. That's
kind of part of it.
We had we did a group reading, because eventually I'm going to be doing Zombie Hands Book Corner.
Oh, nice.
And I'll be doing specifically video game books. And so we did, the first one we did was the Metal Gear Worlds of Power book. And we did, I think, in like two sittings. It's not very
it's
long.
It's not a
long
book.
I read it out loud. So
it was two 45-minute sittings.
I loved, like, just
we were
him
breaking
going around
the entire time.
It was so funny. But I loved, like, he's like, oh my gosh, this gun and this thing here and this thing here, and he just walking arsenal, and then he gets knocked out and it all gets stolen and he never gets it back. What was the point? Yeah. Like, and so, then would like drop kick the gun out of someone's hand, and
I will say, if somebody came to me and said, hey, we're going to pay you to write a novel adaptation of this Nintendo game with zero notes from the developers or anything, probably better than what I could have come up with, to be totally honest.
It's so fun. Like, it's bad, but yes. It's like fun bad. And that's the most I could ask for. I want to know
who at Konami like greenlit that. Like, who at Konami was like, you can use our our intellectual our property IP. For this child.
Absolutely no one, because it was whoever they had running Ultra Games that said okay.
That's very true.
For that book thing, I don't know if you've read the Resident Evil novels by S.D. Perry.
I love them. I'm currently rereading them.
Obsessed. I was obsessed with those books. Seven of them.
If y'all want to talk movies again, Lily and I, because of this episode, actually went and watched The Guns of Navarone for the first time together on Discord, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, I realized
it's a wonderful movie. It's really good.
It's a really good movie. There's a point, like, because I realized that I was looking at the list of movies that you had on the like our little document here, and I realized, like, oh, I've never seen this, and so I asked Alessio if he'd want to watch it with me, and he's like, oh, I've never seen it either. Let's do it. So we just, like, watched it one morning on Discord together. There's a point, and I think it's at about 52 minutes into the movie.
Oh, girl, you know exactly where it is.
Oh.
Right about
hell.
Here.
Holy hell. It's like 52. So it's
frame
right
538.
After.
538.
Yeah.
Right. It's frame number. No. So it's after they get, after, like, when they're climbing up the cliff, and I think Mallory and somebody else gets to the top of the cliff, and they're trying to distract the guard up there. Very Metal Gear, by the way.
Distracting
it's the
beginning
guard,
of Ground Zeroes.
Yeah. It's great. But there is a scene where they, I think Mallory grabs the guard and then throws him off the cliff, and the rag doll that they throw off of the cliff, and it's just, it's the funniest thing you have ever seen in your life. We had to go back and replay it several times before we could move on with the movie, and then we finished the movie, and I said, I have a request. And I said, what's that? And I said, can we go back and watch that again? Because
it was... phenomenal.
It looks so weird.
It's so good.
It's just like a fucking, like, I was thinking about that meme, that gif of, like, the Kermit puppet, like, falling off of the top of the building. It was that. It was just that.
Kermit
it was really like, fucking that, yeah.
He strikes Sack like man a flying squirrel, like a flying squirrel pose. It's like zero arm movement.
It's like he jumped off of a ski slope and just like just all the way down. It's just like, what is happening here? This is crazy.
This is a great Guns of Naro is a great movie, especially with stealth and espionage, that takes you right out.
It's so funny. Me and Alessio have this affinity for, like, the wackiest, like, physical comedy happening. Our favorite, collectively together, our favorite MCU movie is the Edward Norton Hulk, because there is a scene, like, halfway through that movie where Blonsky is, like, walking up to, like, stand up to Hulk, and then Hulk just fucking
just
boots him in the face and just launches him into a tree, and it's our favorite scene in the entire MCU. Incredibly good. We have an affinity for that kind of stuff.
Oh, it's hilarious, because every time that scene comes up, my sitting there go, what were you thinking? What were you thinking that's gonna happen? Well, there he is in the tree.
Well, now, anytime that we watch an MCU movie, the game becomes how long until somebody gets firehouse kicked into anything. And you'd be surprised, usually, more of them than
not. Oh, it comes up more often
than
you think.
Most of the MCU movies have a firehouse kick moment. And it's just like, none of them have lived up to that one in the Hulk so far, but they do have them.
He is in the tree and partially liquefied by the end.
Oh, yeah. Man.
So what you're saying is absolute cinema.
Oh, yeah. For sure. See, when people do that meme in real life, it's fine. When I see the image of Scorsese doing it and people posting it on Reddit, I don't know why, but I bounce off that shit like Teflon. Like, it irritates me to see the absolute cinema image. I don't know why.
It's because it now belongs to Kojima.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, it really is like Guns of Navarone is like a really good kind of like simulation of what Metal Gear is, just like you're sneaking in, equipment OSP, like using your wits, sneaking around, trying not to get discovered. Again, very much Ground Zeroes on the approach, and very much Metal Gear Solid 3 on the sneak. It's just like it's really It's really solid. It's a really great.
Well, and they're trying to dispose of a weapon. So even the main mission, the theme for it is it made it same. Made me want two things. It made me want first a co-op Metal Gear, just really badly, because you see this whole squad together, and I'm like, I mean, obviously Peace Walker's got a four person thing, but like
not the same.
Yeah, not the same.
All the way through. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Integrated
and then the second thing that I want is I desperately need a World War II Metal Gear. So like, let's get the boss World War II game stat, please.
And the final boss, and the final boss of this.
Oh, you got to see QC Hitler. Come on.
No. The final boss is the Sorrow.
Oh no.
Ooh. It would
be. You want absolute cinema? It's right there.
That's very good.
Wrote the parts and everything.
Yeah, that's very.
Call me, guys. Let's do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Love that. That's really good.
Kind of broke Lily there. That was.
You're right.
I've got to go. Thanks. It's been great. No.
I got to go and write that fan fiction. It's going to be 400,000 pages. No, I've got to go and cry in a corner,
actually, and eject it from my brain.
No, it needs to live there rent-free.
It's a weird take, but I always saw Metal Gear Solid and Metal Gear Solid 2 almost like a Godzilla movie. Because they have this giant thing that they can't realistically stop and hope for the best that somebody can get that to do that.
Godzilla is technically sort of like a Godzilla in the second one.
Well, there's also like the nuclear thing is definitely a backdrop to all the Godzilla stuff too.
Oh yeah.
So like there is influence on that one, but you know, the classic one man army type thing, like you can easily see Die Hard as an influence.
For sure, for sure, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now I think there's less of those references in Metal Gear Solid 1, but they do make more of them in 2, and then it seems like progressively we get even more as we
for sure.
Oh yeah,
especially in Metal Gear Solid 3 where they have Snake Eater's theme song as sung like a James Bond theme song. It's like so no uh-huh. We're not even sugarcoating this is happening.
Well, and you've got Major Zero who's like, I'm in love with James Bond. What do you mean you don't like James Bond? Is it the gadgets? Is it the girls? Is it the cars?
I need to see, like, drunk Granin and Rykov in, like, the Austin Powers version of Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yeah.
I would also God, love
yes.
That.
Legs! Huge legs guy.
You know that part where, and I don't know if anybody else did it, but I did this, and I feel kind of bad, but also hilarious. Still makes me laugh. So, you know, for those who don't know the spoiler-heavy podcast, but you know at Metal Gear Solid 3 where our boy Snake loses his eye?
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody go into first-person mode and just go, because I did that.
That's amazing.
Oh,
Leo, I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm. So did everybody else through the one good eye.
I didn't see it.
What is it? Like Metal Gear Solid 2, they have a lot more of those. Although it's still one of my favorite things is Raiden going there. You can call me Snake. Nah, name's been used. Got to change that. One Snake.
We've been covering Metal Gear Solid 2 for like that's what we're in the middle of right now. Like we mentioned earlier, and. Like, Metal Gear Solid 2's whole, like, bit is that it's just one. It's just Metal Gear Solid 1, but, like, in a different environment and, like, very sterilized and, like, meant to be, like, this callback and this thing. And so the references and everything are, like, really, really heavy in 2 comparatively. Which it does, like, it does kind of remind me of the Escape movies because... That's kind of what L.A. was to New York, where it's just like it's just the same thing, just in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot batshit crazy.
Yeah, way crazier. And
I mean, where else are you going to get Jane Fonda's dad surfing through toxic waste L.A.? Like that scene is
that's just jump the shark is happening moment. Now.
I mean, let's go even deeper here. I mean. Snakes. Oh my gosh, his alias in that, Iroquois Plissken, being... Iroquois is, like, a native word for snake.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, he literally is just Snake Plissken.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Well, the crazy part too, and we found this out at the same place where we met you guys. I had never actually realized this before, but when we were hosting the panel with David Hayter, we had like a silly picture of him hanging out with a bunch of Hollywood people, and he was sitting next to John Carpenter. And I always thought like, oh, that's neat. But David mentioned that he'd worked with John Carpenter for like a decade. And it's just like, what is going on here, man? Like, I'm sure that it came up while they're working together because it's after the fact. But yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah, John Carpenter, also a really great director, especially his, weirdly, his older stuff. Like,
I like his older stuff more than his newer stuff, personally.
Fair enough. Although,
I don't know if I've seen any of his newer stuff.
There's not a lot.
Well, so John Carpenter will get most of his fame to fame as Halloween. But like, if you ever see Assault on Precinct 13, amazing.
I mean, the Thing is
the Thing is also great.
I just watched They Live not that long ago, and that movie was a good one.
I love They Live.
Yeah,
that is such a campy movie, but like the best kind of camp.
Yeah,
oh, it's still real good.
Like the hyper serious one.
Have you seen The Fog? By the way,
not
dude. You should check it out. It's got oh my god, I'm totally blanking on her name. It's got Jamie Lee Curtis in it as well. But it's got like, it's like this radio DJ in a town with this fog rolling in, and the fog has these creatures in it. So it's very like The Mist.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. I'm like, am I getting this mixed up with The Mist? I feel I am. No.
But it's like, imagine John Carpenter doing The Mist in 1980. And so it's like, I don't know. It's weird. It's like a cool mix of kind of schlocky with his like sort of vibe. It's really good. You should check it out. The Fog.
Is this why you put the your least favorite John Carpenter film on our like little list thing?
I mean, I was kind of going just through a bunch of stuff that would be funny. Yeah. David Cronenberg is another one, sort of akin to John Carpenter. I think Cronenberg's got some insane movies. Yeah, I love his stuff. I just watched what is that one? Not Scanners. I mean, he did do Scanners.
He did Scanners.
The other one with James Wood, the Long Live the New Flesh. What the hell is that movie called? Videodrome. I just watched
Videodrome. Yeah,
movie is fucking crazy.
I want to see that. It looks, but I've seen so many clips from it from like 80 schlock. It is.
You should check it out. It's really good.
Out there. It is crazy. As Liz will tell me, banana sandwich.
I watched that movie with my wife and my mother-in-law, thinking it would be like a little too far, and it gets done, and my mother-in-law is like, I love body horror. That was wonderful. And I was just like, I just learned something about you, and I'm scared.
You went to Cronenberg. You went to the top of the list of body horror. I'll be honest. As far as the Metal Gear Solid series, I got up to about partway through 3. That's about as far as I got. 1, beat that thing, did the whole thing. Same with 2. 3, I didn't do as well. I think I got, like, I watched somebody, a friend of mine, play it up until after Snake loses his eye, and then I stopped watching entirely. I wanted to stress, I just wasn't there. I wasn't, like, growed up. He finished the game while I wasn't there.
Yeah, we went from covering Delta to covering MGS2, and so it was very interesting to kind of mechanically kind of go back.
I was gonna say, that's kind of a shock to the system, I think.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I remember back in 04 when I played MGS3 for the first time, it definitely felt like a totally different beast. And I remember just like initially, and this is like a sclusy, initially when I played MGS3 in 04, I kind of bounced off of it. Like, I wasn't a huge fan of it, and it took like several days of me kind of powering through the newness, because it's very like, you actually have to be fucking sneaky. It's not just
you can't punch your way across America on this one,
for sure.
Yeah, you don't have your radar, they hear your footsteps. Like, it's very different from 2-1.
You play
two.
It very differently, yeah. For sure.
I think for me the problem there was the how open it was comparatively. Like, because even with MGS2, I mean, it was still mostly corridors.
100%, yeah.
But when you take away the radar and you take away the corridors, it's radically different. Like, I had a lot of trouble with 3 up until the subsistence version. when they introduced the third-person camera. And
yeah, the overhead. You had to hit R1 like it was your job.
Yes. That's because it was your job.
Yeah,
the game was paying you to do it. So it was definitely a shock for me. I still have trouble going back to 3 and like OG 3.
Yeah.
I need that third person camera after that, but I can still go back to 2 and 1 without a problem. And even Twin Snakes, it's like,
Yeah. It is nice to, once you shift into that mode, almost like if you're playing like a Red Dead game or something, like once your brain kind of shifts back, it becomes fun because like you feel like you're playing hide and seek or whatever. Like it really captures that feeling. But you really have to like, let's slow down. Let's take it easy. Let's use camouflage. Like, I don't know. It's just a very different type of game because MGS2, like Lily said, we're covering it. But I'm playing two different versions just to kind of compare the two. And one of them I'm playing on hard, and I have it set to where if you're spotted, it's game over, but mostly so that I can just reset quickly.
European extreme.
Yeah. And
it does wind up being way more, because I watched him stream a little bit of it. It does wind up being quicker. Way more effective. Yeah.
Yeah. But even that, it's like, I forgot that like 90% of the surfaces, they just don't even hear you. So I'm just like mad sprinting between dudes. I'm like it's crazy. Like, you can speed run that game, I'm sure, very, very quickly. It's a very
different game. I literally watched somebody on the GDQ channel speed run it in like an hour, like less than an hour, like a couple of days ago.
Neat thing is though too, there's in-game lore as to why people can't hear all that movement. Yeah. It's the sound dampening padding that's built into the hyper tight skull suit, like stuff like that.
Right.
It's like, yeah, that's kind of almost real. So
yeah. And you can get the sneaking suit in like Peace Walker, and you know what I mean, like even MGS5 or whatever. But it's just from a mechanical standpoint, it's there's a certain type of easiness that kind of goes down a little smoother, I think.
Yeah,
it's very gamey feeling though. MGS1 and MGS2 feel very gamey in comparison to MGS3.
Because it's one of those things where it's like when you're like able to like get this close to a dude around his cone of vision and just like nothing happens, it's like, this feels weird. But like getting yourself engaged in like the system, like one of our the original conceit of the podcast, our podcast was like, you had two veterans. I mean, Alessio, we've been playing the Metal Gear series since we were kids. Shouts out Pizza Hut. Love that demo.
Nice.
And then we had newbies come in and play with us. So people who have never played Metal Gear before, who have maybe heard of it, but just never done it. And so we've done that again with this season. So two of our hosts have never played Metal Gear before. And it's one of those things where it's just like, it's very, very gamey and things like that. But like one of our hosts is like, this is one of my like top five games of all time after having beaten it, where it's like, sometimes that doesn't matter if the rest of it is
sure.
cohesive. So
yeah, so the reason I bring that up is just because for 3, 4, and 5, I turn to you guys for more advice on that one.
The deep lore.
Well, because like 3 takes place in the late 60s, right?
1964.
Yeah, it's
mid 60s. Like, okay, 64.
It's like during the Cold War.
Yeah.
And after World War II, the world was split into East and West.
East and West.
Yeah.
This era.
One of the greatest lines ever committed to the page. For the record, I do think that line is incredibly stupid and clunky to read out loud.
Clunky. It really is.
I don't understand how no one in the vocal booth was like, can I try that differently?
We've already moved on.
We
got 800 lines today. Come on. We're not going back.
We need to bother David and be like, what was the thought there?
Yeah, what's up with that line, brother?
What's going on?
Like, what were you thinking about? You tell me. What were you doing? I just thought 3 is way more open than 2. 2 is, I think, the most closed off.
Yeah, because 2 doesn't have the Shadow Moses sort of helipad moment. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where you're, to me, and I've been on record as saying this before, but to me, like, Ground Zeroes feels like Kojima absolutely perfecting that helipad moment on Shadow Moses. And it feels like it felt to play that for the first time in 1998. You know what I mean? You're like, oh my God, everything's possible. I'm 9 years old. Like, holy shit. But I don't think MGS2 ever had that like Shadow Moses helipad moment, because it's mostly the struts and stuff. You know what I mean?
The closest thing
because like even the section that is supposed to mimic the helipad moment is like the dock is just like this really tiny cramped space. Like everything is so cramped and corridor and tightened, and the first one is kind of like that too, but it is a little bit more open. With three, it's one of those things where it's like it's definitely more open. And you can see the box. It's a box. You can see like the lines and like the seams of the corridors when you run into them if you're really looking for them. But like one of the things that we talked about in Delta when we were talking about Delta was how like when you get to Groznygrad and you're trying to figure out how to get inside Groznygrad and do all that stuff, it's just like that felt like the ultimate prototype for what Ground Zeroes wound up becoming. Because it's like it is that big open playground. You can kind of like go around and like there's multiple sections and you can go inside and you can kind of figure out how to navigate it on your own. You can go under the grates or you can just kind of walk on the surface and be all sneaky and stuff. And they give you an opportunity to go back at a different time of day to like completely change up your approach and stuff like that. So definitely a lot more open with how you can approach things for sure.
MGS5 should have been like Hitman, I think. Just give me a series. If you can give me a Ground Zeroes every 6 months, I will subscribe.
Good. I'm in. Yes.
The thing that I've always said about Kojima is that as he gets further along with the Metal Gear series, you can tell how desperately he just wants to make a movie.
I
think that Ground Zeroes is such a interesting, and like Alessio said, which I agree with him with what he said, which is like that is like the platonic ideal of Metal Gear to me is Ground Zeroes. And I think if he was forced to, because he loves his long-winded, he loves his cutscenes, he loves his really like long emergent gameplay and cinematic storytelling experiences, but like if he is forced into like a box and was forced to make like a really tight like 10 to 15 hour experience, that would be iconic. I would love to see what he could do with more like tighter pacing and structure, but I don't think he'll ever have to do that at this point in his career. So
yeah, it's really just optional at this point. I remember the joke a friend of mine was telling me, like, or it was on the show, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna speed run Metal Gear Solid 2. All right, what am I like, cool, what's your first thing I gotta do? Skip the cutscene.
Yeah, every single cutscene. Yep.
You skip every single cutscene. The game's like 3 hours long tops.
Well, I told this story on the podcast, but I had an issue where when I was playing it, for some reason my Steam save corrupted, so I had to start the game over again. And literally just skipping the cutscenes, I got back to where we needed to talk to in like 20 minutes, like 25 minutes maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a lot of cutscenes. It's heavy. It's heavy for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and we're not complaining.
True.
I mean, no.
True.
Well, the cutscenes are like, unlike a lot of so like you can skip through the cutscenes on it, but Kojima does like to go as cinematic as he can.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about it is if he can do it in game, Kojima will do it. Like 100%. Ocelots, any of the scenes with Ocelot, you could do it with the cutscene. He chooses to do a lot of his dialogue in battle and such, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And Ocelot's just a throwback to like spaghetti westerns and the western film genre and such. That's why he has to use a six shooter, and no one else does.
Yeah, there's a like one of the things when I was trying to get back to that point in my playthrough. One of the things that I noticed is that, like, so there's a section in two where Peter Stillman, who is a bomb disposal expert that's on site, is telling you, like, how to use the coolant spray to disarm the bombs that are planted around the base, basically, the structure.
Right.
If you're not familiar with Metal Gear, like, part of the plot is, like, these terrorists have taken over this
Big Shell, I think it's called.
It's called the Big Shell, and it's like a whole like environmental impact thing for an oil spill.
Filtration system
just,
that's not.
Yeah, it's like a big, but it's like it's basically it's just like hexagon of like struts and shells and like all kind of pieced together by like catwalks and stuff meant to kind of like separate and pump oil from this big oil spill that happened 2 years ago. And it's a front for like some kooky shit. And terrorists have taken over the Big Shell while the president is visiting the Big Shell.
And a lot of stuff has to happen all at once to make that make sense.
Yeah. And so your job as the player is to rescue the president, basically. And you run into a bunch of scenarios that prevent you from doing that over time. One of the things is one of the terrorists has lost his mind. He's planted bombs all over the struts, and you have to go around and use this coolant spray to disarm them, basically, so that you can prevent the place from exploding and killing everybody. One of the things I noticed when I was trying to get, when I was playing through and getting back, is that the explanation for how to dispose the bomb is in engine. You cannot skip it. So it's like you can look around freely, but you can't move. You can't do anything. He's just showing you like how to do stuff. And so like there's a lot of stuff like that I've noticed in Metal Gear where technically it's a cutscene, but like you can't skip it or you can't do anything because you're in the moment. So
I want you to know how to do this.
So
films and film genres are all over the place. But it's kind of nice to just sort of be that guy who is playing through any of the Metal Gears and go, "Ooh, I know where that's from. Oh, I know that one. Oh, I know that one."
Let's not make this a drinking game where if you can spot the movie reference, take a shot.
If you, you'd be drunk by end,
before dead. You well, the end the word is dead,
yeah.
Leo.
Yeah, you'll be dead. Actually, let me rephrase it. Which Metal Gear would we do the most liver damage at this point?
Ooh,
probably I would think probably three, maybe.
Yeah, because
three is the one I think they hammered those references down, right?
Three is the easiest to find a lot of them, so yeah.
Oh, you're in your codec. That's about it. Four shots there.
Well, no, even in your codec, you've got paramedic anytime you go to save talking to you about movies.
I was gonna say, don't you mean IMDb Pro?
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, there's some stuff
dropping
like
agent phone numbers. And
have you ever seen From Russia with Love? Have you ever seen Godzilla, King of the Monsters? Have you ever seen My Mother Was a Teenage Spider Queen from Outer Space?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's the only one that's not a real movie.
She's so quirky and yet one of the most evil characters in the lore of all of Metal Gear.
You're right. Oh my God.
There's something that we noticed also when we were playing Delta is that in some, they reuse the lines, the vocal performances from 3 for it for the most part. I know we talked to David. David came back to do some pickups and for like controls and stuff. But there are some lines in there that reference like they changed the Godzilla conversation in 3 to reference minus one. Not by name, but like referencing like, oh, I wonder if Godzilla will still be. It's this anniversary is happening in the year 2020. I think it was 4 that it came out or 5, 2024. And it's like, I wonder if Godzilla will still be popular in 2024 on this anniversary. And it's like, I don't know. Do you think we'll get a new Godzilla movie in that year? And that was the year minus one came out. So it's just like, there's like little things like that where like they're already references about movies in that game. And then they went back and like updated them for like today, which is like crazy. So we didn't find like a comprehensive list, but like we noticed a couple here and there. So
I never actually got that particular codec call in Delta myself, because I didn't save that much on each playthrough.
Oh, someone here's a pro.
No, somebody has a problem, and that is he remembers all the video games he plays too well, but he still isn't very good at them somehow. Yeah.
Did you ever get the secret Mei Ling cutscene in MGS2?
No.
You have to save 13 times on the tanker, and while Otacon is talking to Snake, Mei Ling will interject, and they'll go back and forth a few times.
That's amazing.
I did not know about that. Yeah, I've played that game since it came out and did not know about that until we started covering it for the show again.
I did know about it, but that's because my my thing with Metal Gear has always been, when I was a kid, if I was like scared to proceed, I would just call all of the codec numbers like obsessively. And so I've heard, I'm fairly certain, like every combination of codec in 1 and 2 at the very least for that time. Although, Alessio, you mentioned Kim, my guest, did not know that's how you got that.
Yeah, I was on the phone with her the other day, and I asked her about it because I told her, hey, we're doing this podcast, we're recovering MGS2. And she said, oh yeah, they never told me how that conversation was going to come up in the game. They just like brought her into the studio,
paid her day rate for 10 minutes.
Yeah, paid her a full day for like 10 minutes of work. And essentially they were like, yeah, we're doing this as like a cameo thing, just have a little fun with Christopher Randolph, blah, blah, blah. And so she knocked it out, and I was like, hey, did you know in order to get that, you have to do this? And she's like, that's cruel. And I was like, well, what do you mean? And she was like, well, because after you see the line, you're going to start calling even more, thinking there's more. And so she's like, you're going to save like 25 times. Like, that's insane. And I was like, you're totally right. Or what about the people who quit at like save number 11? Uh-huh. You know what I mean? And they'll never
see it. Yeah.
So now I have a very important question. Since you have seen this cutscene that I have never seen, does she do the stereotypical?
She has the accent.
Okay. Because they retconned that out with Twin Snakes.
Well, dude. Mm-hmm. And so another piece of trivia on the same call, she tells me that she didn't know they were cutting the accent until she showed up to record for Twin Snakes. And she said that for her, the accent is so tied to the character, and she always thought it was so cute.
She like studied. When they
asked her, yeah. Oh yeah. She went off the deep end studying. And when they told her that at the last minute, she said it was really hard for her to not accidentally slip into it. So there's like a lot of outtakes where she accidentally went into the accent. They had to like re-record it. But
it's also, that's the other thing too, is like when you go back and like listen to that accent as well, like I've always remembered it as way more of a caricature than it actually is. It's way more subtle than I think people give it credit for. And I think that is Aaron Hansen's fault.
Oh my God, Hotness, I want to bang you.
I think
I
think Mei Ling and Naomi both losing their accents legitimately like took away some of their character, I feel like.
And this is just going to be some like linguist stuff that I and
I said hit us with it. I'm ready.
Okay,
I'm preparing.
So, there's just, I don't know how much it is. Again, I did like 4 seconds of linguistics, but, like how much of it applies to adults over time, since you know your accents are always kind of like. By the time you hit a certain age, it's kind of like grounded in your speech patterns. But people lose their accents over time when they're surrounded by people that don't speak their accent. And I think a little bit sometimes of this interview with Emily Blunt and Stephen Colbert. And
what a pair.
She's British, and her husband has an American accent because it's John Krasinski. Mm-hmm. And she talks about their daughter, Hazel, and she goes, Hazel used to have my accent, and so she would say, I'd like a glass of water, and then over, and she was so proud of it. She was like, yes, that's my girl who wants water, like her mom, you know. And then after a while, she noticed that her daughter's accent would be like, can I have some water? And she's like, it's water. It's water. And she's like, no, mom, it's water.
And so, like, say it right or you can't have it.
And so it could be something, at least to some degree, because I... Naomi.
Well, not when they retcon in the remake. I mean, I see what you're saying about Naomi.
Right. No, because that is something.
I mean, it was a strange decision for them to give Mei Ling an accent in the original to begin with, because
she's from California.
In San Francisco.
She
went to
Berkeley. Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You went to Berkeley, man.
Yeah, exactly. but once you've made the decision, it's so weird to like take backsies.
Stick with it. And it's another thing, like let's say she grew up with parents who spoke accented 100%. English, but you still pick up more of what your peers speak.
Sure, sure.
Or speak, because you're not going to, like, you don't spend 100% of your time at home, and it's going to be, who do you talk to the most, your parents or your bestie? And so you're going to start picking up the accent from the people you go to school with and the people you spend the most time with. And so a lot of people who are like second generation immigrant, or like first generation Americans from immigrants, mm-hmm. or what have you, a lot of the time they'll lose their accents because, or if they even have it to begin with, because they're so influenced by their peers. Mm-hmm. So that could be the only case I can make.
I can drop some Mei Ling lore, because I have the official mission briefing book from MGS1. So she was born in the U.S., correct? But it says, despite being born in the U.S., Mei Ling spent her earliest years in a Chinese settlement deep in the Kwantung province.
Okay, but do they mean the first
yeah, first
years?
4 years or first 20? 4 20?
Years or, yeah. Like,
yeah, agreed.
That's kind of what it comes down to, because, again, so once you hit a certain age... Though.
Yeah,
once you hit a certain
cute.
Age, your accent just becomes kind of cemented.
Yeah,
and 100%. So, or I mean, it's always going to be a little bit malleable, because like people used to say a lot that I have a Californian accent because I'm from Southern California, and now I live in where it's neutralized a lot. Our state has a lot of where me and Leo are. Has a lot of call centers, and so I've worked in a fair few of those. Nice. And there's people who would call in from other states and be like, you're from California, and I'm like, well, I swear to God. But I guess there's some things that I've retained, even sure. from, even though I moved back here so long ago. But and it's not just because I say like rad all the time.
Yeah. I was talking well, to a woman who moved to LA in 1979, but was originally from Michigan. And I swear to God, I asked her, like, where are you from originally? Because I could hear, like, the Midwest in her voice.
Mm. Yeah, or, like, people who are from Minnesota. And you can just tell when they're from Minnesota or Boston. Like, there are some of those accents that are so thick. And I just never thought that I thought California was very neutral, but I guess not.
No, it's not. Well, so even, like, talking about, like malleable, too. It's like, so, like, a real-world example here is my aunt. She, like, this is like back in like 2002, met and married a British man. He was in America on business at the time. And then she moved to England, and like her accent now is like this really strange pastiche of like, because she's also from SoCal. So the strange pastiche of like Californian with like kind of like British kind of weird, and it's like it's the weirdest accent, and it's like she's not putting it on, this is how she sounds now. So there is something to be said for like the adult accent being malleable, you know.
Yeah, I think once you go from something that, and I'm gonna use the word extreme, but I don't, it's just like a neutral American accent is very different from a neutral British accent. But there's, I was watching something, I don't remember where I got this one from, but someone was saying that people will go to like college in the UK and suddenly they'll be
university,
like, oh yeah,
darling, university.
I spent my gap year there. And people are like, you're what? And they're like, my gap year or whatever. And they're like,
my gap.
Because they'll just start like picking up like different, I worked at GameStop with this guy named Parker who went to Ireland for cybersecurity schooling, and suddenly he just had a few like Irish inflection.
Irish ticks.
But now he's in like Oregon.
He just goes
full
blown Gaelic in the middle.
Oh gosh. But yeah,
I think the world would be better if we all use the mid-Atlantic accent, you see, and I think
a transatlantic accent is
transatlantic.
That's what they tried
to
do.
Gotta fucking
turn
everything trans, am I right?
Yeah.
Transatlantic. Those orchestras, those trains, those accents.
You might be onto something there, darling.
That was actually...
Jimmy Stewart has like one of the greatest voices.
Yes, quite.
Speaking of transatlantic.
Ah, live from the Zeppelin races. New York City, a city on the grow.
they were trying to create a neutral accent that would sound good in every language, and they came up with the transatlantic accent, which is just a totally fake accent that they used only in the movies.
I want to hear somebody with a transatlantic accent speaking Esperanto, the universal language.
That would be really funny, but it just never
fully I never thought about on. It before. Does that mean, because like most actors, right, whenever they're having to pick up a dialect, they usually watch a lot of shit that has the accent. They usually will reach out to like a dialect coach. They will talk to people who speak that way for real. Does that mean every single actor had to do that for transatlantic?
I think that they had like coaches that would start teaching actors that accent, so they could be so it's like an almost British but almost American, almost Southern kind of thing. And so it's just like, then you get those fast talking actors that were just like, yes, darling, and that's how I want it to be like.
Yeah.
You start getting all this really like, I don't know, it's just, you can really tell the time period, because it kind of started to fall out of style in like
the 50s quote me on
and
that.
60s. It's like, it was such
you
a quote
brief, me on that touch.
I buy that for a dollar.
Time period where it was fashionable,
right?
And then there were some people who grew up watching those movies and such, and so there are people who started to naturally speak with a transatlantic accent, but it never caught on the way I think Hollywood wanted it to.
Right.
Well, you only see it in the talkies.
I want, if there's another Metal Gear Solid, I want somebody with a transatlantic accent to save my game. That I want that to happen and make weird movie quotes at the whole time.
Well, now, see here, doll.
I feel like Major Zero was almost.
Almost there.
He was kind of close. Yeah,
he was kind of close, yeah.
He leaned British, but yes, I definitely see that.
All right, now, doll. I got something to tell you now.
Transatlantic, what were a British man?
Oh my god.
Those two words can make anything funny.
I wonder if the idea behind doing the standout accents was maybe to tie it to the concept of the eclectic group that you have in Guns of Navarone.
Because
like you've got like the guy of the Greek army in there, and you've got the native of Navarone, and you've got all these other people that's like, it's a hodgepodge. You
all
expect
the Nazis.
People to work together.
Then
they do.
All the Nazis.
All the Nazis
so and their
many
cool
Nazis.
Bikes.
And their cool motorcycles. Yeah, while we were watching, I was like, you really gotta, you know, all the bad stuff aside, you really gotta give it to the Nazis. They had some pretty cool motorcycles. And Lily was like, what the fuck?
We're giving nothing to the Nazis.
Yeah,
they get zero credit. Okay?
They get nothing. Yeah. Yikes. Anyway, back to the subject at hand.
Yeah. Oh, let's talk about Cop. Maniac Cop.
Oh, wait.
We got to talk about Maniac Cop. Speaking of ACAB.
Sorry. this was actually back at the accent thing.
Hell yeah.
I know it's not an espionage movie, but... So, Frank Yeager, right? He raised Naomi after she was orphaned, right?
Ninja. Yeah.
Great Fox.
Yeah, so was he also from, was it Estonia that Naomi is from?
I think she's from Zimbabwe.
South Africa.
Isn't she?
Zimbabwe or South Africa, I thought, like one of those.
Yeah. I thought it started with an E. Hang on. Not Naomi Campbell.
My brain goes there every time.
Get closer every time.
My friend would know this right offhand. She loves him, or she loves Frank Yeager. Rhodesia.
That's right.
No,
she met Big Boss in Mozambique.
Yeah, she was from Rhodesia. My friend, favorite character is Frank, and she has everything Gray Fox that she can find.
Hell yeah. What about Null? Thank you very much.
That's a deep cut, man.
We don't talk about Null, dude.
Where was Frank from?
Metal Gear 2.
He wasn't from Rhodesia, right?
That was very good. He's in Metal Gear. He's in OG Metal Gear.
No, but he's not from Rhodesia, right? Like, he's...
I swear to God, he's a
soldier.
Yeah. He's from
Mozambique.
He fought in Mozambique.
I'm just saying, he should have an accent too, probably.
He does in the first one.
He's voiced by a black man in MGS, so...
Yeah.
So is Vamp.
That's not what I was calling
it. No, I know.
Yeah, but he's not in Twin Snakes. They didn't have him come back.
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately.
Instead, they got Pinky.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Shut up, for real?
Yeah, you didn't know that? The voice of Pinky is Gray Fox in Twin Snakes.
Oh my God, no. I love Pinky.
He's going to be much harder to get in contact with than I had hoped for.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that to you.
Alyssa, just call Cam.
That's true.
And be like, hey, I need to talk to Rob.
Yeah, that's true.
I know a guy who knows a guy.
It is actually, it is honestly like I, this is not like a brag or anything like that, but like, it's just one of those things where I just get very like, what the fuck is this life we're living? It's like, we are like a degree of separation away from like a lot of very prominent voice actors.
Sure, sure.
Which is, it's very weird. It's very weird.
The fact that we can start a group text thread right now with the entire cast of MGS1 is insane.
Like, I'm just friends with Debbie Mae West on Instagram. That's all I got.
Debbie's great.
She's funny. Debbie is
good. Call Alessio later.
Right? So I didn't realize this, but I guess Gray Fox was supposed to be one of the dudes that you rescue in MGS1. I don't think he has a name, though. Does he?
He is just called Gray Fox. I don't call him Frank Yeager in that.
Oh, I see, I see. Yeah, I don't think they call him Frank until MGS.
I don't even think they call him Gray Fox. I think they just call him Fox.
God, I just didn't even think he had a name.
No, Gray Fox is his code name, so Fox is just what everybody calls him.
Sure, sure, sure. So I assumed he was one of the nameless hostages from MGS.
They say, I think you're going in to rescue fellow Foxhounder.
There we go.
That's what it was. Fellow Foxhounder Gray Fox in Metal Gear 1 for the NES.
So he wasn't even in MSX.
He might have been, but my memory is probably worst with that one.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
He was in the MSX one.
Oh, okay. So going back to ACAB and Maniac Cop. So allegedly in Metal Gear 2, Solid Snake, in the liner notes of a soundtrack CD, there are interviews with the developers, and apparently one of the mecha designers went so far overboard on the design that they ran out of space on the ROM chip, and so they had to cut a boss. And apparently they cut this guy who was Maniac Cop, who is reference to the 1988 film.
Yeah, Maniac Cop. Yeah.
Kojima.
They also
way into the 80s schlocky horror film, apparently.
Not related to Maniac Cop, but they did also cut a boss from 2, right? Called Chinaman.
Oh,
Metal Gear Solid 2. Yeah, Chinaman.
Yeah.
Who was going to be I think it was going to be Taiwanese, but he was going to brag to be more Chinese than the Chinese.
Wow.
Oh, no. It's Chinaman.
Yeah.
No.
So that is a good call.
Yeah, exactly. Whoever made that call,
bravo.
Or as Zap Brannigan would say, the Chinese.
Oh,
there!
Futurama is my favorite show.
That's awesome.
There really is something to be said about a Japanese man making a video game where he has a character who is Taiwanese, and he's trying to make that Taiwanese person more Chinese than the Chinese. Like that's a insane series of things.
You've gone too Asian. You never go full Asian.
But you know what? If anyone could pull it off.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. That's a stretch.
He can pull off a lot of shit. I don't know.
He made a character named Die Hardman. Okay.
Okay. So yeah, Die Hardman. All of our chances to meet Kojima by saying that.
That's true.
We talk so much shit about him on our podcast. We're never going to talk to that.
Yeah, exactly. If anyone ever did a background check, we'd be out. Yeah.
We did years ago. We had a Facebook comment on one of our things. Like, we talk so much shit about this man. That's how we knew this person did not actually listen to our podcast. And he called us the Kojima Cock Riders.
You're like, so you've heard zero episodes.
Yeah, I'm like, bro, you heard us say one good thing about Hideo Kojima, and you were like, these guys. I don't outright hate him, but he is a goofball of a human being.
Oh, yeah, he's an absolute goober.
Yeah.
I did buy his book that I need to read, though.
But I think now's a good time to wrap this sucker up. So with this,
yeah, perfect. Still,
before the subject finally gets off the rails anymore.
So everybody go watch The Deer Hunter.
The Deer Hunter. If you So just to wrap this up with that, for the Metal Gear fans that are out there, what is your favorite film reference that they have in anyone of the Metal Gear series on that?
Oh, jeez.
Or at least one that sticks out to you a lot.
I like, for me, I do think legitimately, like, how explicitly the character of Iroquois Plissken is just
Snake Plissken,
like who he is, like it's sure, like sure. Just the fact that it's literally just like the entirety of the aesthetic of Snake is just fucking Snake Plissken.
Yeah,
that's one of my shamelessly
one that we didn't touch on that I'll burn my choice just so we can touch on it is just the blatant Jack and Rose Titanic.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Did you also just go, oh man?
Yeah. Like, it took a little bit, but when it clicked, I was like, son of a bitch. Yeah.
Well, you got me again, Kojima.
I will say, I think one of the more, and it's fresh on my mind right now because we're playing through, but I think one of the more like endearing moments, because one of the things that everybody like talks about is how annoying Rose is in 2, which we discovered that Rose was Kojima's wife, apparently.
Like, yeah, he modeled her after his wife.
Which is like, damn, tell me you hate your wife without telling me you hate your wife. But I think one of the more endearing conversations that they have in that game when you call her is the conversation of the day they first met, where they talk about like how the tourist came up and asked which of the buildings that King Kong was on. And they argued about it until the tourists just walked away, and then they went to the museum to like look at which building it was.
But they were bitching at each other the whole time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then their second date, they watched King Kong at Rose's apartment and fucked.
Presumably.
Does King Kong not get you a little randy in there?
Yeah, he kinged her Kong, if you know.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. No, that man's smooth like a Ken doll down there.
That's true. We've all seen it.
Oh. It's not just me saying it. Everybody's seen it.
Everyone tried the pause trick. Come on. We all tried to get that.
Ryden has genitals what were a Ken doll.
Yeah.
Oh, I was at a convention in January and somebody, they were dressed up from Death Stranding. Was it from Metal Gear? Brandon, I sent you a picture. But somebody was cosplaying Kojima.
I love that.
And they made a thing and he was like, do you want to see my super secret technology? I brought it with me. We were like, yeah, of course. And he opened it and he's like, it's just an empty box that has like a scan bed type thing in it. And he goes, it's to scan your feet.
Holy so shit! Good.
That's so funny.
Oh man,
I'll be honest. I'm at a convention, if I'm at a convention and somebody says, "Do you want to see my super secret technology?" There's like a 90 to 10% chance that that's going to be something I don't want to look at.
Definitely in like the way that he presented it. It was definitely in a Kojima character, and I was like, "Fuck it, I'm amused."
I'm in.
Let's go. Let's rock.
I'm gonna burn mine just because, like, what is it? When it's in 3 and it's the Colonel and he won't stop explaining the whole plot of most of the plot of like the Great Escape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just like once again, buddy, I just needed the code name. Hang on, I need this. He's been dying to talk to somebody about the Great Escape.
This
is the moment that he's going to shine. He's like, I need you to know that all 3 tunnels are named after these.
Well, he very specifically goes back and is just like, hey, I'm Major Zero now because I fucked up and I picked the wrong tunnel when I was Major Tom. So we're just going to go with Zero.
Fine.
Well, and it's funny because like you play through the whole intro section with that and then you have to come back to that area later. Because you leave the beginning of Metal Gear Solid 3 and you have to go back to that area.
Right.
And he's like,
It always disappointed me because it was such a badass David Bowie reference. And then he's like, oh, LOL, sorry. And I'm just like, dude, just keep the original name.
He's like, well, this is a guy who he put a lot of effort into this code name and messed it up.
Yeah.
You ever see Reservoir Dogs? This is why we don't pick our own code names. I don't want to be Mr. Pink. Too bad. Nobody gets to pick their own code names. I tried it in a heist once, never worked.
I think my favorite reference would be the Snatchers in Snatcher just being T-800 Terminators.
Mm-hmm. Also Body Snatchers. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the Donald Sutherland version.
And I'm counting Snatcher as a Metal Gear game simply because, well, A, you got the Metal Gear Mach 2. And
and isn't canonically, isn't that the Metal Gear itself, like literally, that's an MGS4?
Yes, I think so, because it's supposed to be, it's canonically Snatcher is canonically a sequel to Metal Gear 2 and is referenced directly in their
file. Right. Yeah.
So I count it as a Metal Gear game as a result. It's just a split timeline.
Count it.
So yeah, the fact that the Snatchers are just T-800s.
Yeah.
I just like everything that paramedic. I mean, okay. I don't
everything paramedic says.
I like her movie tastes. She has done a lot that we don't that is awful. She's done a lot that is very awful.
All
you
off-screen.
Are a monster, but I mean, just, this is listen, a the things 90% on the Rotten Tomatoes. You're right. I'll check this out later.
Just the things that she has done to
Big Boss.
Snake, to Frank.
Oh yeah,
like
all the things.
Just she's not. It sucks that she's so likable. Oh gosh. And see, I love Eva, but I cannot forgive her wrongs. I don't support her wrongs.
Look, Big Mama was just looking for her big papa.
I support women's rights and women's wrongs, okay?
I support women's rights and women's wrongs, except when it comes to doing non-consensual things.
That's true.
But I really
when they do
like
that, you've got some equal lefts to go with those equal rights, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hey. But I couldn't take her. She'd take me in a heartbeat.
Oh.
In a fight. Yeah. But yes, I just like paramedics taste in movies, and it sucks that she went from someone so likable to someone so abhorrent.
Next time I ever play Metal Gear Solid 3, I'm gonna keep a note list of paramedics movies list. Might be a monster, but I need to see this movie. She
does love her monster movies. Mm-hmm. But there's She's probably a list online.
I was gonna say, yeah, it's her. It's her.
Oh God,
projecting.
She saw Alien and was like, "Huh, okay."
She saw it as an aspirational story.
Yeah,
that queen's got a point.
Yeah, good for her.
She does share a lot with Michael, the android from Prometheus and Alien Covenant.
Yeah,
I don't like that you said that because it works.
You never want to go full David.
Never go full Michael. David, it's David. God damn it.
Michael's the actor, David's the robot.
Michael Fassbender. Excuse me.
Oh, that's so funny.
No, it's all connected. Brothers. His name's David.
They're all David.
I have two brothers named Michael and David.
Whoa.
Oh, shit.
Wait,
I think.
Whoa. Whoa. Get me off this crazy.
It's just whenever I hear people say Michael and David in the same sentence, I'm like, please don't. Let's not. I don't wanna.
I'm gonna level with you. It's a pretty common name. Sure. Like in Metal Gear Solid.
I'm not saying
alone.
My mom was original.
Anyway, I think that's it for this. Our next episode will be available in March 6th. But that being said, this is Gaming Theater Podcast logging out. Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Gaming Theater Podcast is hosted, created, produced, and edited by Leo Garcia, the Geek Scorpio. Our music is A Drinking Game. Stock media provided by Stormwave Audio / Pond 5. Our cover art is by Adam Parker. You can find him at ParkerGFX on Twitter. If you want to send us some money to help with these episodes, you can do so at patreon.com/ Gaming Theater Presents. Want to send support that doesn't hit your wallet? Please leave a review with wherever you hear your podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. It really helps out. Thank you for listening.